Barbara, you use the term co-creator a lot. I take the term to mean finding our own deeper wisdom, right? Can you speak to this? This is a very good question, very deep question. And I like the, it is that, but it's more than that. A co-creator would be, first of all, someone through whom the creative, the divine experience is alive. And in my language, it's the core of the spiral. It's very visual to me because it's running through the whole thing. So a person who's a co-creator is picking up this impulse in its evolutionary form as well as in its eternal form. So you can have God within and be still, but for a co-creator, it's the creativity of the divine. You see, God, creator, is obviously creating. So a co-creator is creating, but not out of just personal, individualistic whim, but it feels like an impulse deeper than your own personal profession or job or something. And even in a deeper sense, when you get to be a rabid evolutionary, you have the experience that the entire process is connected as a divine design. And I don't mean that it's predetermined, but I think it's pre-patterned. And when you say yes, like I got a vocation in 1966, and basically my vocation is to go tell the story of the birth of the universe of humanity. I got that. And I got it by asking a question of the universe, what in our age is comparable to the birth of Christ? And that was a very bold question. And I said to the universe, what in our age is comparable to the birth of Christ? What is our story that would have the impact and the potentiality that the story of the birth of Christ has? When you think about it, those four Gospels, if they hadn't been written down, nobody would have known what happened. So what I got was what I call a planetary birth experience. I became an astronaut. I saw myself as a member of the living planet. I saw the planet struggling to coordinate, running out of energy and breath. And in a few sequences, which I won't go through right now, I experienced what it feels like when we synergize, when we have mass resonance. It was a flash of omega, as Teilhard de Chardin has expressed it, when we're connected heart with heart on the inner plane. He called it the Christification of the Earth. I believe I had a precognitive flash of the Christification of the Earth. And the words I heard were, Barbara, our story is a birth. What Christ and all the great avatars came to Earth to reveal is we are all members of one body. We are all imbued by the divine spirit, and we're being born as a new human, a universal human in my language. Barbara, go tell the story. So when I got that vocation, that was not like a nice little personal thing to do. Go tell the story of the birth of. So I had to go home and tell my husband that I had to go tell the story of the birth. And on and on. And nobody liked the fact that I was going to do that. Now they all came along with it. And my five children, I finally took them all to Washington and went through a lot to say yes to that vocation. And I was just as a little aside, five out of five children all have said yes to their vocation because their mother said yes to her. It's a really beautiful thing. So co-creator, you were awakened by creativity within, and if you're fortunate enough to have a signal of your own calling, what you feel you're born to do, what seems to happen is you get connected to a larger pattern of creation, of which you are an element within a larger divine design. And all the things that Carl Jung and others speak about, like synchronicity starts to happen, and what you need starts to come in, and your own potentiality, which can't fully express itself until you have vocation. Without vocation, it doesn't have an avenue. But I said yes to this. And the way I feel is that the Holy Spirit seeks people, and when it finds a likely suspect, a likely suspect, said yes, and I was 36 years old, and it's an incredibly different life. It's a conversion experience to find a true creative vocation that seems to come to you from a higher dimension of reality. And that as you say yes to it, what happens as a co-creator is the creator within wakes up, and you start to be guided, and you start to know what to do. And then you can't do it alone. So you obviously have to reach out for other co-creators. Now, at first, when I got this vocation, go tell the story, I would tell anybody who would listen. And I used to go to cocktail parties in Lakeville, Connecticut. And finally they said to me, you know, Barbara, we don't want to hear how you are. You don't want to hear this. I was with the wrong group. And I noticed in the, this was a Serbia and outside, about, you know, beyond the commuting distance in New York, is that almost everybody was slightly depressed. Why? Because they didn't have a deeper life purpose. Yeah. They were making themselves comfortable. It was a very beautiful environment. And what I noticed, it was shocking to me that anybody who's exuberant about a life purpose, talking to people who don't have a life purpose, they can resent it. Mm-hmm. Because it challenges them. Mm-hmm. If you're not willing to just let depression be the way it is, mm-hmm. but you're actually willing to say yes, even though it may be disturbing or difficult for you, you are challenged, even if you don't want to be. So it wasn't that I was trying to challenge them, but I felt very disconnected at first from the community of my PTA, the League of Women Voters, and because I was with the wrong group. And I'll just tell you briefly how I got out of it in terms of vocation. And this is, there's a whole sequence to this. I mean, you have to feel the discontent, and you have to ask the universe, and then the universe will reveal something to you. And then you start taking tentative steps, and you may feel very awkward. And people around you may not be so happy with you, and you may disturb your relationships and so on. But I was writing letters all the time, and one of my letters fell on the desk of Dr. Jones Salk. And it was about what he was to do. Creating something called the Theater of Man. And I just said, this Theater of Man has to be the whole story of evolution and on and on. So I sent it to somebody who got it to him, and the phone rang, and he said, Ms. Hubbard, this is Dr. Salk. We are two peas in the same genetic pod. You have stated my vision better than I've been able to state it myself. Can I take you to lunch? Well, so this is for the sign of a co-creator. If you get imbued with a life purpose, you have to find at least one other person who resonates to that purpose, or it would be very difficult for you to express it. So Jonas came and took me to lunch, and I had been reading Teilhard de Chardin about a new kind of human he called a homo progressivus. It's a person in whom the flame of expectation burns, someone who has a mysterious sense of the future, feels connected. And he claimed if he was in a room of 100 people and there was one other homo progressivus, nothing could keep them apart. Mm-hmm. Because the flame in the heart would attract one another. So I was telling Jonas about this and telling him, he drove me to New York, and I was pretending to have hay fever because the tears were coming down my face. And, you know, I said, there's so many things wrong with me, Jonas. I'm attracted to the future. I seem to want to be connected. I think something great is coming. He said, Barbara, that's not what's wrong about you. That's what's right about you. You are an evolutionary mutant. I will introduce you to 4 or 5others. It's taken me a quarter of a century to find. See, this is in the 60s. We didn't know people like this then. So Jonas, when he recognized me as something good, something needed, rather than something discontent or neurotic, it affirmed the co-creator within. So another part of being a co-creator is you meet someone whom you admire and relate, and that person sees this in you, and that is a needed affirmation, because we're talking about a deep calling here. It's easy if you go into let's say, a church may become a nun, the structures have been built for that. But the structures have not been built for the co-creator. That's why I call myself pioneering soul. You have to pioneer the venue which could receive you. Because the old venues are not particularly open to you. So after you get some affirmation and you said yes, then you do have to find some partners. Because it's not possible to do any of this alone. So another aspect of the word co-creator is not only this, and to be affirming it, but then the joy of co-creation is really great if you can find somebody who wants to work with you, whose calling is complementary to your own. And I have this great fusion of genius, where when your genius finds another and you can fuse those two, each becomes so much more. And it is so exciting that the process of co-creation then becomes literally bringing forth the potential of the person in the work, in the world. And I think that the way the world is being transformed, wherever it is really being transformed, is through co-creative action. And we see this in great people from history. It's happened. But now it has to happen at a much bigger scale. And you don't have to be just Martin Luther King or Nelson Mandela. I mean, we have to do this ourselves now, not looking up for some major hero. Yes?
About 10 years ago, we were studying Revelation. And so I had this vision of absolutely compulsive about doing Revelation. And finally, I got your book.
Uh-huh.
And so I bring it to Bible study, and they go, oh my gosh, we don't want to hear this. This is, you know, a Catholic doctrine. And Renee, it sounds just like you anyway. It was like, you know, 10 years ago, you were such a light in my life, and then you bring it to the leadership, and go with the Alice and go, look at this, somebody else, you know, is giving us a very advanced form of what Christ was saying.
Yes.
And it was just so moving, and I just couldn't ignore it. And so it's just wonderful to see you here today when no one else, you know,
you're
sharing that vision.
Thank you so much.
Holding your life.
You know, one of the guidances I got when I was guided to go to the New Testament and started to write, and I had no idea I was going to write. It went on for 6 months of writing, just reading a passage of the New Testament, being inspired, and writing what the inspiration was. It's not a theological. It's an evolutionary inspiration that those words triggered in me. And one of the things I was guided to is that it's very much like Tayar, but it's a little bit more deep in some ways, that there is now on Earth a group of self-selected souls who are here to carry the miracle of the resurrection into action as the transformation of humanity from Homo sapiens to Homo universalis. And that's a huge thought. But I think it's that deep. If you look at Homo habilis, Homo erectus, Homo Neanderthal, Homo sapiens sapiens, I think a couple of thousand years ago, the emerging human, whatever name you want, began to grow up in the self-conscious human. And they were the great avatars and the great mystics. But that I got that I was a transitional human between the self-conscious type of Homo sapiens and this new type that I think Jesus is the most perfect example that we've ever had of it. And that new type would incarnate that core of the spiral and be a whole being able to co-create and use all the new powers of science and technology. You know, I'm a futurist, I've studied this, we could restore the earth, we could feed everybody, we have the technologies, the resources, and the know-how to make this world a 100% success. It's all there, but the leadership is in their own consciousness. All over the world. It's not just the United States of America. So I forget what my point was. Oh yes, and the self-selected souls, and that I was to form a new order of the future by forming it in myself. and that I would meet others who are forming a new order of the future in themselves, and that we would form evolutionary circles, and that we would support in each other this impulse of creation. And I didn't really know how to do that, but now there are some folks around me that were saying, let's see what a new order of the future would be. And I did a lot of writing on it, and I think when we get a little further with it, I'm going to talk to Alice and see if maybe someone could help us. You know, from this tradition, because it comes right out of this tradition.
Yes.
And one reason I didn't do it is I was always trying to be generic.
Yes.
Because when I came out with the idea of the evolutionary Christ, the Jews didn't like it, the ordinary Christians didn't like it, the World Future Society didn't like it. I had the ability to fall through every single crack in our culture. And so I didn't know how to develop it. And I became more of a universal evolutionary spirituality. But the heart of my being was right in there. And when I really just put one of my friends down the river said, I think I'd like to be a priest. And I was made, in some strange way, a priest in the Church of Antioch. I'll just tell you this story. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of the Church of Antioch. But it's a metaphysical, ancient Catholic church. It goes all the way back to Antioch. And there was an archbishop of the Church of Antioch in Santa Barbara. And someone said, send him this manuscript. The manuscript at that time was a big, thick manuscript of my writings on the Gospels, the Acts, Epistles, and Revelation. So I sent that to Warren Waters and went to see him, and he was about 90-something, and he greeted me at the door with the manuscript, and he said, this is the church of the future, and please come in. And so I came in, because he talked a lot about the church of the future, that I said, you know, I'm also guided to do the communion. But, and at the time I was running for vice president of the United States. It was just a totally ridiculous How would I possibly be doing the communion every day and I have to hide it from everybody? I'm not a priest. Oh, I said, no problem. You were at 7 seminaries, and he took me into his little chapel and ordained me. I was a priest in the Church of Antioch. I have not claimed this title. And I almost never mention it. Because it's not really my function, but I think what happened there was a recognition that from the ancient roots of the church, and I've often thought what those early Christians must have really been through. If they believed this, they were able to change their entire lives by believing this. And were able to be martyrs, were able to give up everything. And it's totally beyond what I've experienced. But that is the power here. So the question was about co-creators, and it goes all the way through. Any other thoughts or questions? Yes.
When Omerko talks about the politics of connectedness in another chapter, he doesn't mention once the internet. I'm wondering if you see any important stuff going on with that.
This is a very important point for me in my work too. You see this? I call this the wheel of co-creation. The internet, of course, is our global nervous system, and it's connecting people up. And one of the things that's happening in the internet now with a few very advanced people, one is called Paul Hawkins. He has a system called Grokker, G-R-O-K-K-E-R, and also I believe it's called Wiser Earth. What he's done is an information system where you click on, let's say, conscious evolution, and it searches through all the search engines and brings up everything in a pattern, so you click on it, you go down deeper and deeper. There's another person who's identifying all the social entrepreneurship. Paul has mapped 90,000 organizations that are changing the world. It's a huge movement. It's the greatest mass movement in human history, and it's all under the radar of the mass media. Grokker, you'll find it, Paul Hawkins, H-A-W-K-E-N-S. So here's what I'm going to do. When I ran for vice president in 1984, I was inspired by Buckminster Fuller, Abraham Maslow, and Teilhard de Chardin. That was a real strange candidacy. But I actually managed to get my name placed in nomination at the Democratic National Convention. Two of us, me and Geraldine Ferraro. It was a political paranormal experience. That in the office of the vice president there be a new social function to scan for, map, connect, and communicate what's working in America. And that as the war room scans for enemies and how to defeat them, the peace room, as I called it, would scan for breakthroughs and how to communicate and enforce it. The delegates loved that idea and they nominated me for vice president. It was amazing. And then I, when the guard was leading me up to the big platform to make my speech, he said, "Now, honey, they won't pay any attention to you. They never do. You're saying this for the universe." So I got up there, nobody was paying any attention, and I declared that the United States will create a peace room in the White House, and there will be a Kremlin, and we will have a whole revolution of creativity. Now, what's happening now is, along with some colleagues, I'm going to create this wheel as an internet function that can draw on the databases that people like Paul Hawken are putting together, which will have very key innovators in every sector of the wheel, which will be on stages of the big rock concerts and all that are coming up. They're aiming for 2012 to have a mass shift in consciousness. I think the key to that shift in consciousness is the connectivity of that which is created. The mass movement and the civil society is all there, but it's not connected. So I'm one of those who's working with others to create this wheel on internet. And to work, I just have a proposal on my desk. It's very complex. But the number of people who know how to do Wikipedia, are you familiar with Wiki?
Oh, yeah, awesome.
Yeah, and this would be a Wikipedia where, you know, people would put their things in and they would analyze it themselves and so on. Without taking too much time on it, I think the social movement, I call it the wheel of co-creation. So we know what a personal co-creator is, but what would a social and co-creative society be like? It would be a society in which each person is free to be and give their best. And I think that we're ready, my plan of action that I just put out is that by the year 2012, that's only 6 years, there will be, and I would like to be of some help in that, a system whereby anyone anywhere on earth would know they were connected. To the emerging world, not the dying world. Because we can't fix the dying world. We can only build the emerging world. And the more the crises deepen, and particularly now with global warming, and this amazing factor of the failure of war to win anything, this is a very important failure. Yes.
It's so funny to hear you say this, that you suggested that many years ago. But last night I was watching Brian Williams on the Nightly News, and I heard him say they would have a new statement on the Nightly News about what is working in the world. Isn't that...
It's coming up everywhere. Yes, finally. I mean, that's it. Yeah.
I don't know what it'll be, but, you know, it's the idea of looking at what's working rather than what's working.
It's beginning, and my vision is that out of the center of that wheel comes the new news. And the new news is the emerging humanity. It's not just an occasional good news story. It's the new mainstream of evolution. That's what we're talking about. I mean, evolution's been ascending for billions of years. That's what it does. It ascends. So, any other questions before we conclude?
Well, I'd like just to make one point about, it came back to you when you were talking about Jesus having a new ethic, and the new ethic of nonviolence, and that was an enormous shift, evolutionary shift. And it reminded me that John Dominic Crossan, on the Jesus seminar, distinguished between Jesus' ministry and John the Baptist's ministry by saying that John the Baptist had an apocalyptic eschatology. By that, it was, he saw a judgment day where the new world would be ushered in on a judgment day when he would be rewarded or punished. Whereas Jesus had an ethical eschatology based on who he knew he was. So based on his experience of being one with the source of being. And that's where I think, especially for us here at Word and Life and where we're going to move hopefully in the spring, is providing the resources to get in touch with this inner universe. And out of that will naturally come the response, the gifts that we have that will make a difference and help us to co-create. But we have to experience that, not know it up here, so that it becomes our vocation.
He said who? And Jesus said the kingdom of God is within you.
Right.
This is really what I'm saying.
And he experienced that.
This is what we're experiencing. Yes, the Father had a question.
What would be the formulating, let's say, this type of vocabulary concept, individual resurrection?
Individual resurrection, aha. Well, I'll tell you my most far out thought. I think what I've been learning about the amazing realities in quantum physics and non-locality and teleportation of at the atomic level, that eventually that the individual will evolve to a spirit capable of actually creating bodies that are sensitive to thought, that can materialize and dematerialize. I don't think this is a final body. There's no reason to assume this is a final body. The final body. Because bodies have evolved whenever consciousness evolves. You know, amphibians, reptiles, mammals, and so on. So I feel that not now, not in this generation, but just project us even a couple of hundred years, or 200 years, or 500 years, if we don't destroy ourselves, that we will have gotten so deep into the nature of consciousness and the nature of body that we're going to have bodies. And you have to add to this incredible development of non-human intelligence that's coming through the computation and computer world. I go to an event in the World Future Society called the Transhuman Society. And they're redoing us right now. They don't feel death is survivable anymore. And they think it was fine, but now we can understand our own DNA, we're going to shift that. And the spiritual people, I was with a Hindu teacher this week at Saimas, he's working on the death hormone. It's programmed in there to die right now. Death, in the early days, the cells just divided to reproduce, and they learned how to die with a big advantage. I actually think that we're going to have eventually new bodies. But right now, before that's true, when the individual dies, my own, this is personal intuition, is that we have continuity of consciousness. Mm-hmm. That continuity of consciousness, at its highest, this is my metaphysical choice. You see, I believe the universe is responsive to requests. So I decided to request what I would really like. I don't want to come back again here. I believe what Jesus said, in my Father's house are many mansions, and that I am going to have another flock, and I will create a place for you. I realize that's where I'd like to go. That I feel that I'm here in my vocation for the time of the planetary awakening. And I actually think that's going to happen faster than we know. I would like to go onward and be part of the ministry of Jesus at a universal scale. Now, I don't know what that really means, but I know people who really want to die and just go into big mind and have no identity anymore. Mm-hmm. Some of my best friends, like the Buddhists, no interest in it. I had a very strong interest in self-evolution on a universal scale. So I had asked, and following that line of Jesus's, that in my father's house in many mansions, that I would go not to be resurrected in this body, but to be whatever a universal body would be. And it's not like I'm living in expectation of that, but I realize that since it's a profound intention, I might as well intend it all the way. You know?
Intentionality.
Intentionality. How do you feel about individual resurrection? What do you feel?
Especially that it's not the coming back to the earthly body or so that it is. So I, of course, at some point in the past, Christian churches were against cremation because they saw resurrection too much in the physical terms.
Yes.
But now, I think the individual being part of the individual future body.
Yes, and you know, it may well be a deep choice. I have a friend, Hazel Henderson, who's a global economist, and we were going to debate space colonies before the Congressional Clearinghouse on the future. And I was for them, and she thought they were ridiculous. And so I said, why? I'm not going to be an astronaut. Why are you so against this? And I love the space colonies. I love that. And we finally got to it. She said, why would you want to go up into space colonies? And I said, because I expect something new. And she said, really? I do. I am here for a job, and I want to go and go back into big mind. And I said, no, I want to go on Hazel. And we looked at each other. It wasn't right or wrong. It was a metaphysical choice. And so we decided to go before the Congressional Clearinghouse on the future and share what was the metaphysical underlying reason that I was for space colonies and she against them. And the members of Congress were completely amazed. And I said, I wonder if some of the policies that all of you have to do with the metaphysical difference of your view of the nature of reality and your personal impulse. And we didn't get very far with the members of Congress. It was a very interesting thing to do. Well, if anybody has a burning question, not I have a question, just one little question, is, as Catholics, what do you feel is your greatest impulse in evolving this great lineage? I mean, how does it work for you? If anybody just wants to give me a clue.
Yes, I think our emphasis on community, to me, and we symbolize that in our Eucharistic experiences,
mm-hmm.
but that to me is the message of Jesus, being one with one another, being compassionate and caring towards one another,
mm-hmm.
sharing with one another our life experiences, mm-hmm. but that sense of being one with one another,
okay.
I think to me is the core.
Very good. Anybody else have a sense of the destiny that you're working with here?
I think Alberto, when he talks about the kingdom of God, that's what Barbara's talking about too, I think.
Mm-hmm. The kingdom of God within us, in our midst,
mm-hmm.
here now.
Within us, beyond us, around
yes.
us, our ground, our goal, our source.
Beautiful. Well, thank you very, very much. It was a pleasure to be with you. This was wonderful, wasn't it? In listening to Barbara, I was thinking, in meeting others on the journey with you, see, I've always said Word in Life is really about me, and I'm just bringing people along because this is the direction I want to go. But at the same time, and I applaud all of you who come and take on this challenge of expanding our understanding of really what it means to be Catholic, what it means to be Christian, what it means to be human. in today's world. And I really do feel, having people like Barbara come, that we're freeing ourselves of some of the constraints that formal religion has placed upon us, so that we can move out into this larger context that Barbara and Dearmuid and Cynthia are inviting us to see. And it is wonderfully liberating and freeing, and it's so big, and to be able to take a deep breath and to be able to fulfill our potential, it's wonderful. So I want to thank you for being conversation partner with us, and we'll look forward to being with you again, and I'll talk to you about setting up that date. And I'd like to thank you again.